This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is Mark. I'm reading from eatingwell.com and going to share with you today an article entitled "There's a Movement to Revitalize Indigenous Cuisines and Knowledge." Here's why that matters. And I'll share some recipes from their 20 best recipes of 2022 with you. So, in regard to the indigenous cuisines, it says the reindigenization of Native American cuisine through the use of traditional ecological knowledge, the flourishing of indigenous foods, and the celebration of Native chefs and cooks are just a few tools to promote better health. It's cloudy today, and as I write this at my home outside of Santa Fe, this is the voice of Lois Ellen Frank, Ph.D. It's cloudy today as I write this at my home outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico. There is a very gentle misting rain. I can hear the sounds of the numerous birds outside. The crickets are singing. I can hear cicadas. The wind is blowing gently. And there is moisture in the air, which I can smell. I am reflecting on the bounty of this land and the original cuisine that has existed here for millennia. I'm visualizing the abundance of wild foods that existed and still exist, and the knowledge surrounding those foods that were harvested by Native communities all over what is now the United States, Canada, and throughout the rest of the Americas. Native American cuisine, like all cuisines, has a story behind it, one that is deep, rich, powerful, provocative, and a story that is often misunderstood and unknown by many. It is a cuisine that is regional, based on ingredients that are sourced by the communities that live there, as they traditionally have been for millennia. At the end of the summer, I had the pleasure of attending a talk at Santa Fe's Institute of American Arts by Robin Wall Kimmerer, an enrolled member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation and author of Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants. She said we all need to ask ourselves not what we can take from Mother Earth, but what we can give back. That resonated for me. The earth is not a commodity for taking, she insisted, but rather our mother and our sustainer. As the American West experiences more drought and wildfires, and as the polar ice caps melt at record speeds, we are in a time now, as Joseph Brophy Toledo, a cultural leader and elder from Jemez Pueblo, New Mexico, so eloquently states, where we are all earth people, Toledo says. In order for any of us to work towards health and wellness in any of our communities, we need to work together as caretakers and stewards of our Mother Earth. So how do all of the earth people do this? How do Native American communities do this? How does pertinent information get passed down from one generation to another? These are the questions that we all need to ask ourselves. What role do you want to play in this? How can each of us be of service? What can we do to ensure that the earth, our mother, can sustain us for the next seven generations? The answer is not an easy one, nor is there one way to do this. I like to use the analogy of the bicycle wheel. History, or a version of history, is in the middle. But how to tell the story of that history is different depending on what perspective you're telling it from. And just like all the spokes on the wheel, there are differing perspectives of the same historical event, depending on who you are and where you come from. Therefore, history is subjective, not objective. Yet in order to re-indigenize Native American cuisine, it is important to understand what happened and why the cuisine changed over time. Native Americans are uniquely poised to lead in this way because of their traditional ecological knowledge. This knowledge has been passed down from generation to generation surrounding food and foodways, food sovereignty, food security, and environmental justice. Traditional ecological knowledge has been acquired over thousands of years by observing relationships between living beings within a specific ecosystem. How people, plants, animals, landscapes, and environmental factors interact. And this wisdom of how to live sustainably in the world has been passed down through traditional songs and stories. Where food is concerned, elders have traditionally served as tribal historians. They commit to memory a body of past experiences and cultural traditions. When it comes to food, traditional ecological knowledge includes a multitude of other information relating to food and its uses. How to prepare specific dishes, how to find wild plants and know which are edible, along with their names and their uses for food and medicine, when to plant crops and how to help them flourish, when to harvest them and how to prepare and store them. Food is indeed more than something to eat. Food is medicine. Food is provided by Mother Earth. It is a vital method to implement positive change surrounding health and wellness in Native American communities, and it connects Native people to their land, their community, and to their culture. There are four periods of Native American cuisine. They are listed as the pre-contact, first contact, government issue, and new Native American cuisine. Each of these periods brought about changes to the diets of indigenous people, some positive, others negative. In some instances, traditional ecological knowledge was disrupted, pertinent information not passed down, particularly when Native people were forcibly relocated from their ancestral homelands, and Native American children were forcibly removed from their homes and into boarding schools, where they weren't permitted to speak their languages or practice their traditional customs. Even with all these of historical traumas, Native American elders and cultural leaders have found ways to pass on vital information. And this is part of the leadership through traditional ecological knowledge. Understanding what happened to the indigenous diet helps Native community members reclaim and re-indigenize their diets. So what was going on in the pre-contact period? Referred to by many Native American chefs as pre-colonial, the pre-contact period dates back approximately 15,000 years and stretches until the first contact with European colonizers in 1492. This period is the most important on the continuum and one of the most diverse. It includes a wide variety of foods, from ancestral cultivated foods referred to as the Magic Eight, corn, beans, squash, chilies, tomatoes, potatoes, vanilla, and cacao, to a multitude of wild plants and animals. Side note, the Magic Eight ingredients didn't exist outside of the Americas prior to first contact. Imagine Great Britain with fish, but no chips, Italians without tomatoes, East Indian curries without chilies. These wild ingredients differ by region. Native American communities have built their cuisines around them. Wild salmon along the West Coast, shellfish like lobster, clams, mussels, oysters, and scallops along the East Coast, bison in the plains, and wild rice called manumen, meaning gift from the Creator, by the tribes in the Great Lake region, to name a few. Add to these numerous berries, wild greens, roots, indigenous nuts like the pinyon, pine, acorn, and pecan, and many, many more. This historical food period is crucial to the health and wellness of future generations, and it is vital that the knowledge surrounding all of the foods, plants, and animals and information on how to use them be passed down. It only takes one generation for a song, story, belief, recipe, or process surrounding food and foodways to disappear if it's not passed down to the next generation. Then you have the first contact. First contact on the historical continuum is second period on the historical continuum is first contact and spans from the first contact with the Europeans from approximately 1492 through the 1800s. In this period, new foods were introduced to native peoples of the Americas, including domesticated animals like pigs, cows, sheep, goats, and chickens, used not only for meat but also for their byproducts like milk, cheese, butter, yogurt, and ice cream. This was probably the biggest and most profound change in the Native American diet. Many Native Americans are actually lactose intolerant and unable to process or fully digest the lactose found in dairy products. Other foods introduced in this period include wheat, stone fruits, watermelon, cabbage, olives, citrus, and wine grapes. Then we get to the government issue period, third period. Began in the mid to late 1800s and is the most problematic. This is when the U.S. government forcibly relocated Native Americans onto Indian reservations. For instance, the Trail of Tears displaced people from tribes including the Cherokee, Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Seminole from their southeastern ancestral homes to Indian territory, what is now the state of Oklahoma, from 1830 to 1850. Other Native American communities had their own Trails of Tears that are not as well known. This made for a devastating and tremendous loss of traditional lands. Lands that were once used to forage wild plants on, to fish and hunt on, to cultivate gardens and grow crops on. Once forcibly removed from their ancestral homes, these displaced Native communities were issued food rations that included flour, lard, coffee, sugar, and canned meat. It was just enough to not starve, but never enough to not feel hungry. And this is where some of the health disparities that we see now in Native communities began. Health issues that had never been a part of the Native lifeways stem from foods that were forced onto and into the Native American diet. Then we get to the new Native cuisine. Presently, we're in a period which I call new Native cuisine. In this diverse time, Native chefs are doing what feels right to them. Some are using foods only from the pre-contact period, while others are innovatively combining foods from all periods. I like to say that this period is the period where Native communities are going back to the past to move forward to the future. Today, Native Americans are choosing what foods they want and on their own plates. And it's an exciting time. Through the passing down of traditional ecological knowledge, from outreach like ancestral food distribution boxes, foods donated to organizations that feed urban community members, to the Cultural Conservancy of the San Francisco Bay Area, to the proliferation of social media accounts and YouTube channels by Native chefs and cooks, we are witnessing a reclamation, revitalization, and re-indigenation of ancestral Native American foods and foodways. So let's eat. In the recipes that follow, you'll see how Chef Walter Whitewater, who is Navajo, Diné, combined foods that his people survived on during the tragic long walk of the Navajo, called Hawaldi, with one of the introduced foods from the food distribution program on Indian reservations, and foods where he had growing up, to make his grilled cactus pad salad, oranges, raspberry vinaigrette. So let me go there. We're not going to have grilled cactus around here. How about we go to Kalena Bray's Seneca White Corn No Bake Energy Bites to wrap up this part of the show. So these white corn no bake energy balls, this recipe was passed down from Kalena Bray's parents, David and Wendy Bray. They're They're both Seneca White Corn educators in New York State who share their knowledge at hands-on workshops hosted by universities' Native American centers, farms across the country. These are no-bake energy balls. Get lots of staying power from a mix of oats and corn flour, peanut butter, coconut, dried fruit, and mixed nuts. They're easily customizable by changing up the dried fruits and nuts. I have to hurry here. It's an active time of 15 minutes. Let's see, where'd the recipe go? Skip to the recipe. 1.5 cups of quick oats, 1 cup of roasted white corn flour, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 cup of natural peanut butter, 1/4 cup of unsweetened applesauce, 2 tablespoons of pure maple syrup, 2 to 3 tablespoons of water, 2 tablespoons of honey, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of unsweetened coconut flakes, plus more for rolling, 1/2 cup of dried fruit, such as raisins or currants, 1/2 cup of unroasted, salted, roasted, mixed, chopped nuts. Mix them all together, roll them into balls, and set them aside to rest, and they're ready to go. And continuing with the indigenous recipes, we have a recipe here for a Native American parfait. It features blue and white cornmeal cooked with culinary ash, a primary source of calcium in Native American communities. It's layered with a mixed berry and apple compote. All right, let's see where this goes. And then from Melissa K. Nelson, who is an Anishinaabe Métis Norwegian, enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, recipe for wild salmon glazed with chokecherry syrup. And kind of wraps this article up. It says, today is a time that is not only exciting, but also empowering for Native American communities. And I believe that everyone can play a role in this re-indigenizing movement, the health and wellness of all people. Time for a sustainable future is now. Time for reclaiming and revitalizing indigenous foods and foodways for Native American community members is now. What can you do? You can buy ingredients from Native American producers and growers to support these efforts. Native American foods movement overall, from hard hand-harvested wild rice, Native-grown tipperary beans, culinary ash, and blue cornmeal to teas, soaps, and natural beauty products. Get involved. Become part of the Earth's People's Movement for the health and wellness of not only all our community members, but also of our Mother Earth. So I'm going to back up here. That's the end of the article. And I'm going to share with you the Seneca. Well, I did the energy balls. And how about the, let's see, Native American parfait. It says these striking parfaits are made with 2 colors of corn pudding and berry compote. If you prefer, you can use just 1 type of cornmeal, culinary ash, typically made from wood like juniper, is used in Native American communities as a source of nutrients like calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and zinc. These make a satisfying breakfast or not too sweet dessert. Enjoy them warmed or chilled. All right, certainly look beautiful. Let me tell you what's in there. It says it takes you about 50 minutes to make. And it's dairy-free and egg-free and gluten-free. It's heart-healthy, soy-free, vegan, and vegetarian. Calls for 4 small Fuji, Honeycrisp, or Gala apples, preferably organic. 3 chopped and 1 sliced, divided. 1/2 cup of unfiltered apple juice or cider. 2 cups of frozen mixed berries. 1 cup of unsweetened applesauce, 3 tablespoons of agave syrup, divide it, 3.5 cups of water, divide it, 1/2 cup of finely ground blue cornmeal, 1 teaspoon of culinary ash divided. It's just that's optional. 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt divided. 1/2 cup of finely ground white cornmeal. 1/2 cup of chopped pecans toasted. Fresh mint and or juniper sprigs for garnish. Just the combined chopped apples and apple juice or cider in a medium saucepan. Bring to a boil over high heat. Stir in berries and return to a boil. Reduce heat to medium-low. Cover and simmer until the apples are tender, about 15 minutes. Then add applesauce and 1 tablespoon of agave. Stir until combined. Return to a simmer and cook, uncovered, for 5 minutes. Remove from the heat and set aside. Meanwhile, bring 1 cup of water to a boil in a small saucepan over medium-high heat. Combine 3 quarter cups of cold water, blue cornmeal, 1/2 teaspoon culinary ash, if you're using it, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt in a small bowl. Whisk until smooth. Slowly add the cornmeal mixture to the boiling water, stirring constantly to prevent lumps from forming. Reduce heat to low and cook, stirring constantly till thickened, about 3 minutes. Stir in 1 tablespoon of agave. Cook, stirring constantly as the mixture spits till it's thick like pudding, about 3 minutes and more. Transfer to a medium bowl and cover to keep warm. Wash and dry the saucepan. Step 4 is to bring 1 cup of water to a boil in the saucepan over medium-high heat. Combine white cornmeal with the remaining 3/4 cups of cold water, 1/2 teaspoon of culinary ash if you're using it, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt in a small bowl. Whisk until smooth. Slowly add the cornmeal mixture to the boiling water, stirring constantly to prevent lumps from forming. Reduce heat to low and cook, stirring constantly until thickened, about 3 minutes. Stir in the remaining 1 tablespoon of agave. Cook, stirring constantly as the mixture spits so it's thick like pudding, about 3 minutes more. Remove from the heat. And to assemble the parfaits, divide the blue corn pudding among 6 10-ounce glass jars, about 1/3 cup each, or small, similar glass-sized glasses. Top with 1/2 compote, about 1/3 cup each. Divide the white corn pudding among the dishes, about 1/4 cup each. Top with the remaining compote, about 1/3 cup each. Top each parfait with the remaining apple slices and sprinkle with pecans. Garnish with mint if desired. As for the culinary ash, which comes as a result of burning juniper tree branches, it adds a subtle, smoky, bitter flavor to dishes it's used in. You can buy it online along with blue cornmeal at shimaofnavajoland.com. Shima, S-H-I-M-A, of, O-F, Navajo, N-A-V-A-J-O-L-A-N-D.com. That's where you can get the culinary ash or blue cornmeal. For the best flavor, it says to toast nuts before using in a recipe. Toast chopped nuts, place in a small dry skillet. Cook over that medium low heat, stirring constantly until fragrant, about 2 to 4 minutes. And back at our indigenous recipes, there was one other recipe that looked pretty interesting. Where did that gut go? Well, can't find it again. It had something to do with corn. However, they do have a recipe here that salmon with choke cherry citrus sauce. Let's see what they've got going on there. Salmon Nation refers to the land stretching along the Pacific coast from Alaska to North California. Coho salmon once populated the small creeks and large rivers, feed San Francisco Bay. and braided a salmon tapestry along the riverine basins of the North Coast Mountains. Salmon is a precious fish relative, an integral part of indigenous communities in this region, and its protection is an act of resistance. Melissa K. Nelson, chairman of Cultural Conservancy, nonprofit based in California's Bay Area, shared this recipe featuring wild salmon paired with another food native to North America, choke cherries, shrub belonging to the rose family. The astringent cherries are commonly made into jellies, preserves, and syrups. The latter is used to glaze this salmon. And here's your recipe. It calls for 4 6-ounce skin-on wild salmon fillets, 4 lemons diced, 3 tablespoons of choke cherry syrup. There's a tip about that coming up. 1/2 teaspoon of kosher or sea salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground pepper, 1 tablespoon of sunflower oil, 1 cup of fresh orange juice strained, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 4 tablespoons, that's 1/2 stick, of unsalted butter cubed, sliced scallion greens or chives for garnish. And your directions are to place the salmon on a baking sheet with 3 lemon slices under and 3 slices on top of each piece. Cover and refrigerate for at least 8 hours or overnight. Second step is to discard the lemon slices when you take that out of the refrigerator. Brush the flesh of each fillet with 1 teaspoon of choke cherry syrup. Sprinkle with salt and pepper. Heat oil in a large cast iron grill pan or skillet over medium-high heat until hot but not smoking. Add the salmon, skin side up, cook until brown, 3 to 5 minutes. Using a fish spatula, flip the salmon and cook until opaque in the center, 1 to 2 minutes more. Transfer to a plate and tent with foil to keep warm. Fourth step is to combine orange juice, lemon juice, and 1 and 2 tablespoons of choke cherry syrup in a small saucepan. Bring to a boil over high heat. Cook until reduced to about 1/3 cup, about 10 minutes. Remove from the heat and add butter, whisking until it melts. Serve the salmon with the sauce. Decoratively dot each plate with a bit of the remaining tablespoon of choke cherry syrup. Garnish with scallion greens or chives if desired. And it says you can buy choke cherry syrup at Native Harvest. And it says you can get about an 11 quantity of one for $11. And it's sold out. Well, that is, though, at where did they tell us that was at? Native Harvest Ojibwe Products. May be able to find it somewhere else. Be interesting to see what a choke cherry looks like. And there was a tip in regard to it, but that was the tip. And that's not quite what we have enough time for. Let me see what else is here. Tease you a bit for next week, our 20 best recipes of 2022. There's a cucumber sandwich, chicken and spinach skillet pasta with lemon and parmesan, spinach and mushroom quiche, and we've seen the cinnamon roll overnight roats, and a creamy chicken noodle soup with rotisserie chicken. Those recipes are available at eatingwell.com. There's also chicken cutlets with sun-dried tomato cream sauce and loaded broccoli salad, spaghetti and spinach with sun-dried tomato cream sauce. Those are just about, oh man, and then there's American goulash. I'm going to come back for that for next week. looks quite delicious. I'll start our readings for next week with the American goulash. As it is, that's the time for the reading we have from eatingwell.com for this third week of November. Wish you all a good week and look forward to reading to you again next week. This is Mark Breitenstein signing off.